Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Des Bishop Podcast. Great episode coming up because Steve is back. Stephen Mullen, formerly at Hello Steve-O on Instagram, now at the Stephen Mullen. Getting very fancy for himself. Steve has finished his first year in a Trinity Access course. And by all accounts, it seems to have gone exceptionally well. And God knows, Steve has now come armed with a full year of studying philosophy at Trinity. And it very much drives this conversation. For me personally, this has been one of the more enjoyable conversations that I've had on the podcast because I love a good chat about the existence of God and also a chat about the toxic nature of online discourse, which I feel like that conversation comes up a lot, and I do apologize. However, it is an occupational hazard of the stand-up comedy / content creation industry these days. And so it comes up a lot amongst comics. I do apologize for that, but I do think that it affects all areas of our lives. And Steve was talking about the Premier League has started to push an anti-online abuse campaign. And I do think it's actually going to become a bigger issue than just a cancel culture conversation. Because even though we do talk a little bit about cancel culture, it's not really the nature of the conversation. The nature of the conversation is really the toxic atmosphere online. But the bigger part of this episode is very much about Steve being inspired by studying Nietzsche and about essentially talking about what's behind all this crazy world, our own existence. And it is very much two men in their 30s and 40s pontificating about life. But I think it's an interesting conversation. I hope you guys feel the same. Trigger warning, we definitely talk about God being real or not. So if that's something that is going to be very upsetting for you, I want to give you a warning because that does come up. But not with any sense of authority, we're just throwing up all the different options and what that means for people who might not believe in God. It's a very open conversation about life. So I hope you enjoy it. Steve's in good form. We're happy to have him back. Don't forget patreon.com/Des Bishop every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Most of the time, my Wi-Fi dropped today halfway through the episode, but I'm calling my internet provider here in Manhattan about that. Maybe we can get a sponsorship deal from Spectrum. Instagram at Des Bishop. I'm at the Comedy Cellar live pretty much every night. I'm at the Comedy Cellar every single night this week from Friday to Thursday. So if you're looking to see me, do check that out if you're in New York. If you're in Ireland, I'm waiting to find out if I can add some autumn dates. I'm going to put up I mentioned at the end of the podcast, but I'm hoping to put up some autumn dates. Not Mia Mama. Mia Mama is definitely going to be 2022, but I'm hoping to put up some kind of Des Bishop Unmasked, kind of a post-pandemic show. But again, I'll keep you posted on that. And any updates will come at the end of the episode. Please enjoy the episode. It's me and Steve talking about the meaning of life.
Look at you.
I know, man. It's
Jesus Christ.
I know.
It's definitely been too long for you
Yeah, yeah. The beard is... The thing is, I have obviously known that my beard is growing long, but I haven't really been interacting with people outside of my house that much. So Now, I posted a photo on Instagram today and everyone's going, Jesus Christ. My mate from Limerick, shout out to Mark Hedman, was like, Jesus Christ, will you have a shave?
Oh my God, Steve, I can't believe, we leave you alone for a couple of months and you come back like, now I'm sure you're not getting back into comedy, man.
No, it's, my appointment for my hair is booked tomorrow week. I'm excited about that. I'm going short and the beard is coming off.
Because you know the hair, the long hair, I'm completely fine with. It's the beard. First of all, it's very dark. I mean, you haven't very a hint dark. Of gray in there.
There is. It's just you can't. Yeah, I have.
Yeah,
a couple
but
of
it's
grays
very on. Dark. It's almost your beard is so dark it looks kind of fake.
It looks dark. It looks yeah, like on.
Like if you walked into a supermarket, I'd be like, "What spy organization is this guy from?" Because you really do look like you're in disguise.
Yes, it does. I just need the funny nose and the glasses.
Yeah, I mean, people can check out Steve's Instagram. Sorry for starting off with such visual humor, but you definitely look different. It's hard for me to concentrate, to be honest with you.
It's not that. It's coming on. Yeah, no, it is. It's quite long.
And I can see the season change in your lighting. Like you're more well lit.
Yes, I do. I haven't invested. I did see a ring light the other day and I thought about it. But
no, but I feel like nature has given you a ring light. You have
yes.
Just the room is brighter. The dark.
Oh, no.
We got through the dark winter of the pandemic, Steve.
Yeah, bro.
Without each other, though. Without each other.
I know. When's the last time that I was trying to figure out? We definitely talked after Christmas.
We did talk after Christmas, but then you got really deep into the college work. And yeah, you just were no longer able to commit to the podcast.
It was crazy. I think one of the last times we talked was I had a lot of presentations on, but I was also the organizer of some of these presentations. So it was a nightmare, my end organization.
My two co-hosts have had very different experiences. One was too busy and has now done their presentations. The other has sold out 6 Vicar Streets in the meantime.
I think it's 7 now, isn't it?
Oh, is it 7? Yeah.
I think so, yeah. Whatever.
Meanwhile, we're still stuck in the pandemic, man, hustling out with the content.
Yeah.
So how have you been? Let's just start with that.
Well, yeah, it's how have I been? I've just finished exams last week. So that was a real anti-climax because like a massive sense of achievement, but an even bigger sense of what the fuck am I going to do now?
Yeah, congratulations. Now you're going into first year.
So,
well, it's great to have that focus though, you know?
Oh, bro. Yeah. Like it's done amazing. Like I think for anyone out there who's thinking of doing it, I mean, it's done huge things for my confidence. I didn't realize how unconfident, is that a word? But how confident I was not in myself.
Unconfident is a word.
Yeah. In how unconfident I was in myself. And then it was like the year I really enjoyed the education. Yes, I definitely became a bit of a nerd, but I've loved it, man. And it's been, honestly, it's one of the best things I've ever done. I'm really happy I've done it, you know?
Oh, that's great. And what do you think is giving you the confidence? Was it particular to education, or was it just that you were doing something, sense of achievement? Which do you think
I
was
think
the overall?
All of those things. Like even like I was so intimidated, bro. But like people wouldn't think this of me because I know a lot of people have assumed I've gone to university and all that. But I've had a chip on my shoulder for a long time. I think of myself as a dropout, you know, and. And so what gave me confidence was even stuff like writing an assignment and getting a great mark and going, oh, you can do this. And they're like, yeah, and this is what they do in college. You know, you can do it. You can learn it. And I got better and better at assignments in particular as the year got on. And then even something like I had an idea and sent it to this guy in the Irish Times, and the Irish Times publishes it, and I'm like, holy shit balls. Do you know what I mean? I wouldn't have had the confidence to even send that to them.
Which is hilarious beforehand. Because you've been doing stand-up the entire time, which is actually more difficult than both of those things.
I know, bro. And it's like you don't that's what confidence is. It's like it's not logical sometimes, is it? You know, you don't really. But It definitely, and it's given me a, even when I go back to, or if whatever, when stand-up comes back, it's a completely different approach now because my mind has other levels of working now. It's kind
of cool. Interesting because you'll have a, you'll be curious to see how this increased self-belief, this awareness of which was obviously apparent to everybody else, now that you have it within yourself, what will this do to your comedy? And what's really interesting is I was worried that you were going to fade from comedy because you seem so focused on the education, and I had a sense of maybe you drifting away from the unsure life of stand-up comedy, but maybe now that you've finished it and you've got this new confidence, you're going to come back with a vengeance.
I think it comes back like there's no plan, but I think it possibly comes back differently. I think even the confidence thing I've had, like, holy shit, how could I possibly do Trinity and do comedy at the same time, for example? And I've had plenty of cool people in my life, like our amazing agents as well, kind of going, yeah, of course you can do that. Don't worry about it.
Of course you can do that.
They're all like,
that's how I started. I started my career when I was in college.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, of course. So just, I mean, I'm actually enjoying, well, I haven't been very good at it, but I tried to do nothing for a week and that was the most depressing week of my life. Everybody's going, you just need to do nothing, learn
yeah,
to
you
do,
do
nothing.
You need to do nothing,
like,
Steve.
Yeah. And I was just like, I booked an early appointment with my therapist. I'm like, fuck this, doing nothing. But
I'm sure the therapist tried to get into that with you.
Yeah, well, like, why do you want to, like, where does your self-worth come from and all that, blah, blah?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because now you can up your level of a dropout because, you know, Bill Gates, all these very wealthy people, they dropped out of college. So what I'm hoping for you is that your comedy career takes off so much in the next 2 years that you drop out of Trinity so that you can sort of like, yeah. You can just have a higher, you can maintain your identity as a dropout, which has served you so well, but now you can be, I dropped out of Trinity rather than... I never got my leaving cert.
Yeah.
You know, it just sounds, it's a higher level of dropout. You know, dropping out of college is cool. Dropping out of, you know, dropping out of secondary school, it's not that it's not cool, but it just suggests a higher level of suffering in your life.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So I look forward to you being a college dropout. And I only say that because I want you to have to drop out because your comedy career has taken off so much that you don't have time to worry about
time for
fucking
it.
Sociology. Yeah. And, it, you know, you don't have time to depress normal aged undergrads who have no motivation whatsoever, you know?
Yeah. I'm going to try fit in like... But that's where my head is at recently. The last the philosophy assignment I had to do, I wrote on Nietzsche and his famous parable of the madman and God is dead, and I'm studying this and I'm writing it out and kind of saying, you know, explaining what it means, etc. But also simultaneously going, how can I put this into routine?
Yes. Well, I think you get a lot of kudos when you bring up Nietzsche in a routine.
Yeah. You know, Straight away,
people are like, oh, this guy, this guy knows what he's talking about. Because honestly, if you're bringing up Nietzsche in a routine, there's only two things that you are. One, a student of philosophy, or two, a fucking obnoxious asshole trying to show off at a party. Those are the two people who bring up Nietzsche. So you have a reason to bring it up. You're studying philosophy.
Yeah, it's do you know what's crazy as well? It's how the relation. I mean, this I didn't even plan on saying this, but the relationship with my father has actually we've become a lot closer on a different level. Because I didn't realize how much of it. Like I did realize, but I didn't really understand on a deeper level how much of an intellectual my father is. And he read a lot of my assignments, for example. He read all of my assignments, actually, all year. And he might do a proofread or whatever like that. But, man, we were on the phone for an hour about God is dead. And for those of you who don't know, my father was an evangelical Christian preacher. And now he works, he has a community cafe in Dublin 7 here. But, like, we're on the phone for an hour conversing about God, do you know what I mean? And this whole belief of God and all that. And, like, we just didn't have that before. It was just a barrier nearly because I was the rebel kid who wouldn't do what he would say and he was the preacher. But like we're really having it out about what God is dead means, you know. It was great.
Oh, that's cool. Now I know nothing about God is dead. Do you want to give us a quick synopsis?
Yeah, well, it's basically at the time that Nietzsche wrote this. So Nietzsche was famously an atheist, also the son of a preacher man, actually. His father
is that
was
right?
Yeah.
So you have that in common with Nietzsche.
Yeah.
Which doesn't surprise me that Nietzsche brought you and your father together. What a great story.
I'll have to say that to him, yeah. But Nietzsche was, he was the son of a Lutheran priest. And I think he was in training to go and become a priest himself. But his father died when Nietzsche was very young, and he became like really angry about it. And then he eventually came to a point where theologically he just could not believe in God. He's like, there's no way I can believe in God. And he kind of dedicated his philosophical writings to, some of his philosophical writings were his most famous stuff is about the fact that there is no God, you know, and lots of atheists like to quote Nietzsche. But what we studied was the parable of the madman, which is this parable of this madman who comes into the market in the morning, in the bright early morning light, and he's got this lamp and he's looking around the place frantically going, I'm looking for God. Where's God? Where is he? And everybody, all the atheists of that time, are looking at him and laughing, and they start taking the piss out of him, and they're like, oh, maybe he's hiding, or maybe he's scared, or maybe he, you know, they start taking the mickey out of him. And then he goes, oh shit, I've come too soon. He was like, wow, who are we? So, sorry, he says, God is dead and you killed him. We killed him. And who gave us the sponge to soak up the sea? Who gave us the brush to be able to wipe away the horizon? Who gave us? And he's basically saying, if this whole idea of God is actually dead, then what is the point? Well, then what else is there? Because if you're killing off the idea of God, well, you better bloody have something better lined up. He's saying to the atheist, and Nietzsche was like, he was one of the most famous critics of Christianity, but man, does he go to town on atheists.
Right.
Because he's like, you fucking idiots, you have no idea what this means. You have no idea what to take away a belief in God means. You won't know, he says, you won't know you're up from your down, you won't know you're left from your right. Everything that you are comes from a belief in God. And that, so that was his argument, basically.
So basically, he was suggesting that regardless of it being fake or real, society requires this thing yes. to believe in.
Well, he specifically attacked, and he calls them English idiots, I think it was, or English something. He was specifically hitting English philosophers at that time who were atheists. But he's saying, yeah, but all the literature that you produce, all the art that you produce is all inspired by this idea of there being a God. If you if you want there to be no God, you have no right to take anything from what Christianity has built. I thought that was like... For me, I thought it was brilliant because, I mean, Nietzsche, in the end, he went mad and he died, I think it's at 60, but he wouldn't believe in God, yet he understood the darkness of what that meant, essentially, to him. Now, he did come up with his own theory as to how he would live his life in the end, which was his theory of amor fati, which is a love of fate. And he came up with his theory of the eternal recurrence of the same, which was... If a demon came to you in your lowest low and your loneliest point in your life, and he said to you, you know, you're going to live your life over and over and over and over again with all the same highs, with all the same lows, he says your reaction to that, to being told that, will give you, it gives you your meaning in life. So you're either going to turn around and gnash your teeth and be like, fuck this, this is hell, or you're going to turn around and go, you know what, that's the most beautiful thing I've ever heard. I'm delighted by that. And that's what he decided to do. He just decided that that was the point of his life.
Right.
And then he actually responds to the demon. This is how I ended my assignment. He responds to the demon by saying, my God, you are actually a divine God, and thank you for telling me this, to which I left at the end, which leaves open the question, the idea of God, is he for or against it? You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is interesting. I mean, so Nietzsche... Despite not really believing in God, believed in the necessity of a divine. Is that? Because I haven't studied Nietzsche at all.
I think, like, again, I've only studied this particular aspect of his studies. But I think what he's saying is, like, it's around the age of the Enlightenment. And he's angry about the arrogance. I mean, you look at we studied the French Revolution as well. And, like, at the worst point of the most violent phase of the French Revolution, they were actually talking about starting their own church. That was, there was no God, their own calendar, their own, like, everything. And that period lasted 8 months when they said, okay, stop, everybody stop. Because they were chopping everybody's heads off. You know, they were going, if anyone who's against these ideas, we're chopping your head off. Which is very like cancel culture, Des, I have to say. Oh, right. The left going, if you don't stick with our rules, we're chopping your fucking head off. Yeah. I mean, metaphorically, now it just happens on Twitter. But
yeah, I was just going to say, I wonder what Nietzsche would think of... of the internet.
Well, I mean, I had this conversation with one of my cousins. Like the poster of the French Revolution was liberty, equality, and fraternity. Everybody quotes that. That's what the revolution was about. But they're also forgetting the last two words, which was liberty, equality, fraternity, or death. That was the original. So you basically follow the rules or we're going to chop your fucking head off. Now, in modern times, they just go, let's not put that down because that was a bad period of the revolution. But that was the original thought.
The absolutism of it. But that
exactly.
It's always the problem, isn't it? And it's often the problem with revolutionary idealism, whether it be violent or ideological.
Yes.
The extremism can take over. The absolutism of it can take over. But this isn't about cancel culture. This is about basically every camp in modern discourse is very absolutist, my way or no way at all.
Yes. Yeah. It's fascinating. So if we talked previously about the famine, you know, and you know how the nuances of that and how that wasn't black or white, but in modern day society, it very much suits you to take. A certain
well, it's funny because I was just joking about that on Dale Cronin's podcast. One of my colleagues in Dancing with the Stars,
right,
former boy band star. But he was asking me a little bit about cancel culture, and I was basically saying that, you know, the sane place to be is in a nuanced world where. You know, nothing is black and white, and we can hash everything out and try to make sense and understand our disagreements. And even if we disagree, even if we agree to disagree, that you know we can live in that place where we leave open a space to grow together and understand together. But basically, in modern day, nuance can suck my dick. Nobody cares about nuance, which is why guys like me and you are fading away into obscurity, Steve, because we're moderates. You know, and it's hard to be passionate about our moderate views. I mean, sure, I've had some impassioned rants about Donald Trump, but really my rants come from the dissatisfaction of the move away from the center.
That's a good show, though.
What, aggressively moderate?
Yeah, something like that. You know, it's kind of like
toxic masculinity for moderation.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. That's a great show.
My toxic masculinity for good.
Yeah. You know? Definitely, man. There's like there's a few people have been saying, you see all the old school rock and rollers are kind of saying like that nowadays rock and roll is being center because everybody, it's just boring. Everybody's left or right. So it's like, it's rock and roll to be moderate these days.
Telling you, man, I think we're the goddamn revolutionaries having fucking, you know, having nuanced point of views.
What's interesting, I was thinking about this morning, was like I can't remember if it was John Stuart Mill or John Locke, but some of the early philosophers who came up with our modern day democracy, and they came up with what it was to be a libertarian. They argue like for the minority, not just in today's culture, we think of minorities as a very specific thing, but they were talking about minority points of view. And they said like... If you cannot, it's the most important thing in the world, if you cannot stand up to have a conversation with somebody who completely opposes your point of view, if you cannot do that, then what you stand for is nothing. Because you have to be able to go into these robust conversations and be able to defend and to argue it out. Because if you're not able to do that, well, you haven't thought it through enough. We're using all these cancel culture, all this terminology, but something like being triggered. If you're triggered, then you haven't thought through enough. You don't believe enough in what it is that you believe in. You haven't thought it through enough. You know.
And there's so like a good example, and I'm not taking a position here, okay. But there's a very good example happening right now online where people have their opinions on the conflict that's going on in Israel-Palestine, right? And I'm not discussing it politically whatsoever. However, there is an epidemic of simplistic point of views that are flowing around the internet. Mm-hmm. And it feels to me like you have to accept the one, and that is the one that you live and die by. And it just, that type of conversation, which is basically, unless you agree with me, you are a horrible person,
yes,
is not healthy.
Nope.
Moving forward. You know?
Nope.
We see it in the North. And these are extreme examples because these are things that really matter. This is genuine life and death. Bombs are flying in both,
yes,
directions. People are dying. And there's, it's very tragic. But the point is that this level of trying to simplify everything into this is the position, agree or disagree, is, it's not a healthy conversation.
No. And it's, and I think what was the modern day internet generation, particularly Twitter, what they're failing to realize is the connection. And if you like, and that's the great thing that philosophy has given me this year, is if you look at these points of view, you see how they fabric, how they create society, how they construct society. So if you have an attitude about I'm a lefty, people are just having this relationship on their phone, you know, they don't see how damaging that discourse is and how that builds and creates society. And they, I mean, it's really preposterous, to be honest with you, but never, I don't know if there's ever been more of a split in Western society, and that people can't see that you're creating more and more of a split because we can't talk to each other more and more and more, and it's just causing more and more conflict.
Well, there's real examples. I mean,
I saw vaccination
is the best example.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, of course, this would, I guess, naturally come from what would, I guess, these days be considered the other side of the group that we were just talking about. But I read, mm-hmm, a great article in the New York Times this morning, I think it was the Times, about a former anti-vaxxer who is now pro-vax and has lost all her friends. She had, you know, developed a big online community of people who were supportive of her vaccine hesitancy views. And now they've all completely abandoned her. But on the flip side, when she originally expressed her anti-vax views, she talked about the anxiety that was created for her from the abuse she got from pro-vaxxers.
Right.
And the point is that there is absolutely no gray area with this discussion, which, I mean, for me, I have to say it's hard to argue about the anti-vaxxers, but the point is that this level of division has now created a genuine, a large cohort of hesitant people, and now we're going to have a problem long term with herd immunity because of it.
Yeah, and we have to, you know, I think you got to be able to be open about the fact that you disagree about these things, but then you got to be open to be challenged on that, and you got to be, it's okay to be challenged, and it's okay for us to challenge each other, not, you fucking idiot, you're a moron,
you're a shill for the pharmaceutical company.
Yeah, it's just like,
but even the pro-vax people, of which I am one, even the pro-vax people who then go online and rant and rave with this negative language, it's just so unhealthy.
Mm.
It's insanely unhealthy.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I just, you know, I mean, I guess we haven't talked in a while, so this has been building up, but
yeah.
I wonder what the end game is for this level of division in society. What is the end game? What would Nietzsche say? That's what I always ask myself.
Yeah, you don't want to hear what he said. Fuck that.
What would Nietzsche say?
It's pretty bleak. It'd be pretty bleak, I think, if he went all the way with it. I think there's I've been watching lots of interesting conversations on the internet, and, you know, like the UK is a fantastic example of, I don't know if you saw the elections, the local elections, that, and they lost another seat in Hartlepool.
What, Labour?
Labour yeah, lost another seat. And it's just like, it's getting worse and worse to the point that they're even questioning the existence of Labour anymore. So, like, it's crazy what a hammering they've taken. And There's a couple of, like, people are honestly asking, will Labour ever win an election again? Like, it's really bad. And there's the argument there that Labour needs to split and the left of Labour needs to go and do their, you know, really left kind of touching on Marxism, all that kind of stuff. They need to go over there and we need to create another party. But the only way it's going to get better is, and it's funny enough, of all people that said it yesterday was Tony Blair. He's like, you just got to go more, everybody has to become more centrist. That's it, you know.
I know, but they vilified him because he's made a tragic mistake of
he did the war in Iraq
and now he has to live and die by that mistake.
He did make a great point about that, because they did question him on that. He's like, people, are you to blame for Labour's results because of the war in Iraq and all that? And he responded, he's like, everybody in Parliament voted for it, so so I was like, okay, you know, it's like, it wasn't just Labour, everybody was on board with that. Everybody, we got it wrong, but everybody signed up to that. So anyway, I don't know. That's another debate.
You know, this is so Nietzsche of you to leave all our listeners completely depressed. 25 minutes into the podcast, I've never been more despondent in all my life.
No, so, well, sorry, I think it's,
honestly, you want to know the truth?
I think it's positive.
It gives me great anxiety, like genuine anxiety, to the point where, like, if I was talking to a therapist right now, which I haven't been talking to a therapist since the summer, but if I was talking to a therapist right now, I would say that I have a genuine problem with the level of anxiety that any interaction on the internet is bringing me these days, because the fear of upon which just any point of view may bring, like, for example, so I have all this new material that I'm doing in the, you know, since we came back after the pandemic. I have what I can certainly what very strong reactions from the audience, like very positive, like funny, big laughs, big energy around material I'm doing. First, I go after the sort of the people that loved pointing out anybody's mistakes about COVID. You know, I call them the COVID police, but, you know, I guess there would be a, you know, like, maybe a Fox News watcher would appreciate that material, but I think everybody appreciates it because, as you and I know, I was very pro-mask. I really followed the rules, but at the same time, I witnessed these people who are really just getting a kick out of pointing out everybody that did anything wrong and, you know, like calling people out for having their mask down when they're outside. So I've got some good routines about that, but then I also have some very strong routines about the hoax people, the anti-maskers, and I rip on them. But I took a clip and I put it up on Instagram, me going after the anti-maskers, and after a day and a half, I took it down because the vitriol that was coming back from the anti-mask side, it was so strong. It was giving me so much stress. Now, I ignored the comments largely, but at the same time, I started to see, you know, when the paragraphs start, you know you're in trouble, you know?
And
the reason why I took it down is because I just didn't want that type of energy on my page, because I knew that even though it's just a point of view, and it, not to mention it's also a joke, which actually, if you watch the whole routine, has a little bit more balance on it, but because I only put up one side of that joke, it's just a point of view and a joke about people that thought that COVID was a hoax. But the problem is that because people's identity and their sense of self-worth is so tied into what they believe in these days, these people take it incredibly personally. Therefore, the responses that come back are deeply personal, you know, and hurtful. And the response doesn't add up to the stimulus, because the stimulus is just a joke, right? So I took it down because I literally couldn't handle the stress and the anxiety related to it. And, it's kind of got me thinking that, like, am I capable of dealing with the internet discourse?
I watched a great conversation with regards to the future of comedy, certainly in the UK, with Jeff Norcutt. He was being interviewed and he was really smart. He was a real lefty Labour voter all his life, and he's written a book called Why He's Changed to the Right. Now he votes Tory. I thought what is interesting, he talked about comedy and, for example, what the BBC are commissioning in the UK, and they pulled, like, the MASH report, which was quite a lefty comedy show. But the government are kind of going, look, there's too much lefty stuff on the TV. It just needs to be more balanced. And he was really interestingly kind of going, we have to get to a space, but certainly in comedy, like, do you know many right-wing comedians? I don't, you know, that you have to get to a space in comedy where we're kind of doing what we talk about what we're talking about, what we want to talk about politically, and not and being fearless about it, and kind of having to go, I don't give a fuck what anybody in the internet says. Like, I'm joking about this, I'm going to take the piss out of this side, I'm going to take the piss out of that side, because there's definitely a vibe in comedy, and it's this kind of like subtle bullying culture that if you're not within a certain circle, or you're not tweeting certain things, or you're not signing up to certain things, that means you're X, Y, and Z. And that's I mean, I can only speak for comedy, but I think I'm hearing it's a thing in the arts in general, that all the arts are lefty-lefty, and that's not healthy. We're all in our own bubble. So I understand what you're saying about the anxiety with people get, you know, getting into confrontation with that, but I think our role as comedians is to take the piss out of everything and just to kind of stick two fingers up and go, if you don't like it, go fuck yourself.
I know, you know, it's tough though. It's tough, you know, because you just,
I know, bro. Yeah,
it can be, yeah. So I mean, when I say it's tough, I'm just talking about my own anxiety. I'm not suggesting that in any way, shape, or form there's like real suffering going on here.
No, but I think it's, I mean, I've experienced like some abuse online. It's not nice.
No.
It's not. Like, so everyone thinks, you know, oh, so get over yourself, it's a message. But somebody says something personal. Somebody mentioned my daughter in an insult there recently, and I hit the fucking roof. But people
but
don't
really... it gets very personal. That's the whole
point. Yeah.
It gets very personal.
Yeah. And it we're really just does. Comedians.
Yeah, I know. And obviously, the it's a joke defense doesn't always fly, obviously.
Mm.
But there has to be, you know, if something is not overtly offensive and problematic, there has to be like a slightly different parameter for somebody joking around. But in relation to my anti-mask joke, it's just masks shouldn't have been so divisive. And, you know, making a joke about sort of, you know, the guys I grew up with being like anti-mask kind of Fox News guys, you know, it shouldn't raise the level of vitriol that it raises. That's all I'm saying. And this that's very much not a left or right thing, because I'm still a lefty. You know, I'm still a fucking, I'm still a relic fighting for people who don't want me to fight for them anymore. Anyway, this all comes back to you talking about Nietzsche.
And sorry,
and the
guys.
Absence of God. I mean, really, maybe this is all due to the fact that the presence of God is under threat and people are fighting it in many different ways. This is what happens in a godless society.
I think, like, I'm bringing it back to God again, but you obviously know George Berkeley, the great Irish philosopher. And he
like
was
you say, like, I obviously know George, but I've never heard of him, Steve.
Really? There's like no, but there's towns in the U.S. that are like named after him. Berkeley,
I know,
University in California.
Now you're trying to make me feel.
No, I'm not trying to do anything, Dave.
You've obviously heard of George Berkeley, the great Irish philosopher. Wow, one fucking year in an access program, and you're fucking that
anyway,
snobby. Unbelievable.
No, it's not snobby, but he and like. So there's obviously every, like, people know about the whole Descartes, I think, therefore I am, was his famous quote. So this is a metaphysical problem. Is the world made up of material things, or is it all in our minds? Blah, blah, blah. And Descartes believed, well, there is material things in the world, and there's all the things that go on in our mind, and they're both real. Then you have materialists out there in the world who believe everything is material. Everything in the world is made material, right? But Berkeley was brilliant, because he posed the problem of, like, he was like, no, everything is in our minds. Everything's just an idea. And you're like, fuck off. Don't be absolutely ridiculous. But then when he breaks it down, you kind of go, oh shit, yeah, he's not wrong, is he? He's kind of, where do we get our information from? From our senses, from our sight, from our touch, from our hearing, from all that kind of stuff. But we know that we can't trust our senses, because what you taste in a coffee and what I taste in a coffee are two completely different things. So there's always perception involved. Therefore, all the information that we come in, nothing exists unless it's perceived as his thing. And so you're kind of going, shit. For me personally, I can't get past that problem. But then he makes the argument, well, we know all these ideas are put in order because there's one ultimate perceiver, it's God. You know, so that's his argument. And
simplifies it by making God the ultimate perceiver.
He put it a lot more eloquently than I did, Des.
Which is like, but that's very interesting, because it is that great battle between sort of God's will and self-will. And sort of self-will being riddled with this, you know, sense of the untrustworthiness of our senses, the conditioning of our mind, this, I guess, in a way, almost toxic place of our own perception
100%.
versus the pure, refreshing truth of God.
Yes.
I mean, it's a very enticing proposition.
Well, that's the thing, because like this year, where you read something like Nietzsche, Nietzsche made me believe more in the idea of a God, because I'm like, well, fuck that. I'm not going with his thing.
You're not going with the chaos.
I'm not going with that. Well, I'm not going to take God away from everything. Then what have you got? I'm like, well, I believe in God now. Fuck that.
Did you ever see the movie Pi? Did you ever see the movie Pi? Darren Aronofsky's Pi?
Rings a bell. Pi. What was that?
Darren Aronofsky. It was about a guy.
He did the one with Mickey Rourke as well, didn't he?
Yeah, the wrestler.
He did
Black Swan.
Right.
He did Requiem for a Dream. That's how I became aware of him. I'm just going on a memory of a movie.
I'm thinking The Life of Pi. That's different, isn't it?
Yeah, that's different.
Yeah.
Pi was kind of like a psychological thriller about a guy that was. I think essentially it was basically like that he had figured out the mathematical equation for the meaning of life.
Okay.
Essentially, that he had figured out this is my memory, and people may criticize me for what I thought Pi was about. But my memory at the time when I watched it, which was a long time ago, was that he was basically trying to figure out the numbers behind the meaning of life, essentially the mathematical equation for God. And my memory of the end of the film is when he figures it out, he fucking goes mad.
Yeah, well, it's a bit like Nietzsche.
I've been thinking about it since you brought that up.
Yeah, no, definitely. And again, we don't...
Because I've always thought that God is pi. You know, the fact that we've never really... You can't get to the end of pi, you know, this infinite number, and they keep 3.14 going further.
Recurring.
Yeah, they keep going further and further. But mathematically, there's always going to be...
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Some faith. There's always going to be some sense of, no matter how much we figure it out, there has to be some sort of leap of faith. We can keep going with these numbers, but we're never going to get to the end of the never-ending paradox of the circle, you know?
It's funny because, like, Berkeley at that time, so this is the 1700s, he was saying things like, there's no such thing as absolute time, there's no such thing as absolute space, blah, blah, all these things, and everyone was going, you're full of shit, blah, blah, we'll prove it scientifically. And then you get Albert Einstein centuries later going, yeah, there's no such thing as absolute time, there's no such thing as absolute space. Do you know what I mean? So it's just like, these things are never ending, you know, infinite black wormholes, how big is the universe, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it weirdly does make me believe in certainly an idea of God anyway. I don't know about the religious thing that we've been taught, but the idea of a greater power, for example, going on, it's just like, I mean, that sounds a lot better to me.
Do you think sometimes that, because there's some people that are just not going to believe, right?
Yeah.
And they're going to look at all the negatives that have come from religion and belief systems and an inability to bend in relation to these belief systems. So they're going to rebel against it. And they're going to basically say, what's wrong with not knowing? Okay. Mm. What's wrong with just not having a complete understanding of how it all works, but also knowing that we have to interact with each other. And we've got some sort of consensus on morality at this stage of our evolution. So what's wrong with that? Right. Should there be a movement of people being like, what you believe in is not important. Whether it's real or not is not important. What is important is something that we've now understand in society, which is a society with no belief, a society with no faith, is a society in chaos. So even if it's bullshit, find a fucking belief system, stick to it, and don't stick to it so much that any other belief system is considered your enemy.
Yeah, I
should we just be honest and be like, listen, we know it's bullshit, but this fucking bullshit works. Should we be saying that?
There's a huge argument for that. There's also people in religious sectors that would say that you're missing the point with religion, that religion does say that. Like, I talked to my girlfriend about it, actually, who she's, I would say she's traditionally a Catholic. She's kind of practicing, but she was brought up Catholic in Portugal. But her idea of God is completely different. And her idea of Jesus and Christianity is completely different to what it is that I was taught growing up, and I wasn't Catholic, but even to what people in the class that I was in understood Christianity and God to be. It was all about rules and this is bum, bum, bum. And she's like, no, it's an idea. It's an idea to organize around that we look, I express my belief in a greater power through this idea of Catholicism. I spoke about this with my dad, with the Nietzsche stuff and all that. And he loved Nietzsche because he was like, yeah, because the people who got it wrong most about what Jesus meant or what God meant was the church. You know, that's like my dad. Like, he'd be a bit of an outlier like that. But
yeah,
like,
but a lot of the evangelical Christians are like that, right? That basically they say that the organization of it was really the great sin.
But also Jesus was saying that at the time in the Bible, and he was. That was his attack on the Pharisees because they were the church at the time. They were organizing religion at the time. And Jesus was very much coming along and saying, I can't believe I'm talking about Jesus. Jesus coming along.
Jesus, you are turning into your dad. You are turning into your father.
But I do love it about like certain, like there's lots of atheists out there who are completely like, if that's what you believe in, that is great. But we do have to come to a consensus as a society, God or no God, we're going to live according to these rules because we believe in them and these are the right reasons for it, you know?
And how do I, so I've always been a believer in that we need to have a sort of a modern consensus. You know, how does one go about that? I don't think it's possible in the
we have to start our own church here.
The current environment, you know? Because people get very offended. They're very protective over their belief system.
Yeah. How do we grow a beard
and go back to college?
We honestly, Des, we had brilliant conversations in our philosophy class with, a doctor of philosophy who's the guy who was teaching us. And then we had one of my colleagues who was in his 70s, a Marxist. You had me who was, I think I was just kind of asking questions and kind of constantly trying to find, well, hold on, that doesn't add up. If you believe that, then that doesn't believe that. We had other materialists in the class. We had other people who had experienced their parents on their deathbed who had been atheists their whole lives. And then just before they're about to go, bring me a priest, you know, like, and so just that changed case, their man. Perception of God.
Just, exactly. Just in case.
The insurance, you know. but what philosophy did was brilliant. We had these massive debates out all the time. And it was great. That was just like Monday mornings, cup of coffee. Okay, let's break now. We don't know if God's real or not, but let's have a cup of coffee. You know,
they used to say in Ireland, never talk about religion or the North at a dinner party.
Exactly. Dinner party. Yeah. That's right. That was the rule. And no politics if you're drinking. That was another one. You know. So, honestly, it is conversation, and it's being okay with somebody that you completely disagree with, but you could still have a pint with them. I think that's really important. But the ability to still have conversation with that person so that they're not sitting angrily at home connecting to other places that are angry on the internet, and then they have their community of being angry, and then this belief system builds up, and it's negative, negative, negative. We gotta, you know, it is about talking and being able to have the crack even though you hate each other or something. not hate each other, that even though you completely fundamentally disagree with somebody else, you know?
Yeah. That open discourse is difficult these days.
It's not going to happen on the internet. People need to start with that, I think.
Yeah, we need to get off the internet.
It's not going...
But well, don't get off the internet until you've liked and subscribed this podcast.
I think, well, no,
it's a love hate. It's a love hate, Steve.
Well, we've got to be mature enough to realize what the internet is. It's about output. It's about, it's literally not designed to have a two-way conversation. That's not how it works. It's about clicks and likes, et cetera, et cetera. That's fine. It works for what it works for. But like, we got to be able to have a pint with our enemy as well, you know?
So Well, that was good.
We're gonna open an Irish bar on the wall between Palestine and Israel and go, lads, come on, pint. Come in, either side. Well,
straight away, they're just gonna be like, worry about your own fucking divided society.
Yeah.
What about they're gonna what about you from the get-go?
Yeah.
And be like, you know, like they're just gonna immediately point out that you need to worry about your own situation at home. Well, that was good, Steve.
Yeah. It was good. But you're back doing comedy. Sorry, I'm intrigued to hear that because that like comedy still doesn't exist in my head at all, you know? So you're back doing it.
Well, where do you do it, Steve? What a charge. What an incredible feeling you're going to get when you're back just speaking and having nobody to just your point of view. No pushback. Wait till you can just do a thing and have people laugh or not laugh, but you don't have to worry about the comments.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about people getting offended. What was your show?
You're first back in the cellar, were you?
I've been back in the cellar. I've done a few spots in New York Comedy Club too, but yeah.
And what
I'm on the cellar tonight too. I mean, I've talked about it a bit on the pod, but it has been great. No, it's fine. It's been great, you know? And the thing that's been the number one thing I needed to know was like would I still be sharp, and that came back pretty quick, so there was no sense of like losing the skill. The funny thing that I was joking about on Instagram the other day, which actually I think a lot of people misunderstood, was I very quickly developed like a strong 15 around COVID and masks. I was talking a bit about it and about vaccines and joking about the different vaccines and just a lot of just material, very current material about what we're dealing with. And, you know, like bloggers, and, you know, just like a lot of the stuff we're talking about right now. And it got really strong reactions to the point where I now need to really like get a few of my older bits, not that old, but just bits from the last 5 years. I have to get them back in the rotation. And I'm actually procrastinating bringing them back because I like the new stuff so much, which I was joking about on Instagram. It's such a hilarious conundrum to be like, I need to do my old stuff, you know, because like the comedians are always like, oh, I got to try this new bit. I didn't try this new bit. Whereas my old bits feel like new bits because I haven't actually given them the time to, you know, dust them off and, you know, get the timing back on them.
Is this the bits with me and Mama?
I did a few. I've incorporated a few me and Mom. Oh, because I have a bit about being a boomer. No, about how I hate boomers because I can't go on TikTok without being called a boomer.
Right.
When I'm not a boomer, I didn't buy a house in 1970 for $60,000. I inherited one off my dead parents.
Yeah.
So I then throw a couple of dead mom jokes in there. But no, not the me and Mama stuff. Just, you know, like some of the dirty bits, like going down on a woman bit.
Who's get a lock on this? I remember.
I had to fucking find a video.
I video. I could have told you that routine.
I have a video from the night that we did the Three Arena, you know, for the Sean Cox fundraiser. And there's no audience audio on it. But I did the bit that night, and I had to find it. It took me ages to find it, but I found it. I had to watch it to remember the cadence and the beats of the routine. And I found that like nearly 2 weeks ago, and I still haven't been motivated enough to do it because every night I start talking a little bit about vaccines and stuff, and I just every night some new bit, you know, there's all this new shit just keeps coming out, and society is like charged up, the audience are charged up, and there's like an energy to it. It's quite, you know, it's like a strong performance, and I can't stop bloody doing it. So I still haven't done the going down bit. It seems so trivial and unimportant. You know, which is not true, because it's very important to motivate men to do these things.
Big time. Male motivation, that's an issue, isn't it? I put on weight like over the course of the lockdown. I was like, geez.
Oh, I put on weight. I tore my groin.
Oh, really? Yeah, that's what it's like being engaged. Jesus.
Yeah, I tore my groin playing tennis. Hey, you know,
I was going to say playing tennis.
Real life issues. You know, we're trying to sort out the world, but in reality, the things that are real issues are too much tennis. It kills our anti-establishment identity. What are you saying?
The tennis. I went for my first game of football yesterday, And yeah, I'm hurting today. But same, the groin is sore for some reason.
Oh, be careful, bro! I tell you right now, man, bloody groin strain. It's one of the worst things that's ever happened to me. I've had cancer. I've lost both my parents, but this groin strain is horrific.
Yeah,
I was bullied as a teenager, but there's nothing worse than this groin strain. It's killing me.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and how's Hannah doing?
Oh yeah, she's fine. The season is done, and now we're just getting into. She's back on stage. She's been gigging.
So wow.
Now it's comedy. It's comedy focus.
Right. Okay.
I'm trying to sell her some of my old routines. I was like, listen.
Sell her the immersion routine.
I'm never going to do. Yeah. I'm never going to do this routine again, Hannah. You want it? It's a good routine.
You know the immersion, Hannah?
So, yeah. So that's all good. But, yeah, that's really it. There's nothing else to report on the.
What about Ireland? Are you ever coming back to us? No, but like, is it planned?
Well,
to come back?
It looks like we're going to delay Mia Mama to 2022. But what I was saying to Christina was that I want to go back during the autumn, even if it's like socially distant shows. I want to go back during the autumn and just do like a new show, like Des Bishop Unmasked or something like that, which is basically just like I want to do the post COVID material.
Yeah,
because Mia Mama's timeless. Mia Mama's like a story about grief and anxiety. You know, it's not like, whereas like I got a lot of things to say about like what we've just been through. So I'm hoping to be able to go back in the autumn and just do some like random, just like straight stand-up shows. But I'm waiting to find out we still don't know what Ireland's going to do. But the minute we know, I'm going to try to get back. But I'm also going to do some touring with Hannah. But I do want to make sure to get back to Ireland. But also I feel a little like disconnected from Ireland in that I had a very different COVID experience. We didn't have that second depression that you guys had, you know?
Yeah, it's been, it's especially the second one there, the motivation to be able to do a pod. Like, it was great that my head was in the head was in the schoolwork, but even to do a podcast and stuff like that mentally, it was just like really difficult. It was like, I had a few people asking me on podcasts and I was like, I ain't got the time, number one, but number two, I've got nothing to say because I've just been here, like, again, you know, just kind of.
So what was it like that first? You know, you guys have suddenly had this liberation.
Yeah, well, literally just Monday gone, man. It's been, you can definitely feel a change in the mood and it's amazing. There's definitely a change in the mood. Little things like going and playing football yesterday. I got to cycle through the city centre and I hadn't been through in I don't know how long. And it was busy again. And it's just it's positive, you know. I actually had to go drop something over at the college there the other day. So I went past your house just to check in and it's all good.
You were on the South Circular?
Yeah. Because I got off at, what is it, Rialto there on the Lewis and then walked to Crumlin from there. I think there's just a bit more of a positive mood. I mean, touch wood and all that, like the priorities in this house is like my poor partner hasn't seen her family in such a long time and it's looking, I mean, touch wood and all that, like Portugal's in a really good place at the moment, so it's looking, we usually go there for August, so it's looking that we, touch wood, we can do that possibly. I don't know. We may or may not have our vaccines, but if not, her father will be able to come and visit us. So it's just little things like that, man. I'm going to go up to visit family outside of the county. Like, I haven't been outside of the county since last summer.
It's just hard to fathom because it's just so open. I've been second dose since March 19th. And like, oh, now over a year, they're like begging people to come in for vaccines. Like, like they can't
completely
get them in because
different.
Of the hesitancy. And, you know, they're opening up to teenagers just to get the bloody vaccines in arms.
Wow. Oh, it's completely different then. Jesus.
I know. When I was getting vaccinated, somebody I follow on Instagram in Ireland was like talking about, you know, my 85-year-old grandfather just got vaccinated and all smiley. And I was like, jeez, Louise.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I'm already on my second dose.
Yeah.
And they're still celebrating 85-year-olds getting vaccinated in Ireland. Very frustrating, the timing, you know?
Yeah, it's been a long time. And I think, especially in a small country as well, you realize how smaller it is when you've just been stuck on it for so long.
Luckily, it seems to be picking up. But I can't imagine the frustration. Like, I feel guilty, actually, when I talk to some of my friends and their frustration in Ireland. It's like, it's actually the first time since I moved to Ireland in 1990 that I felt like different, like I didn't get it.
Yeah,
I felt guilty that I didn't suffer along with ye.
Yeah, it was quite. I think overall, it's quite. I think people come out the other side of this, and a lot of people, myself included, will like realize how down we were. You know, how kind of.
Well, that's what I felt from getting on stage, and I've said it to a lot of people. It's like you don't realize till you're doing it again how great it is to be doing what you love.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people worked throughout the pandemic, so everyone's had different experiences. But for me, it was like, wow, thank God.
Mm.
But I'm not complaining. I wasn't down. I've been on the ocean the whole time. But still, you know, there was things that I realized when I got back on stage.
Yeah. Yeah. Christina called me actually once and she was like, do you miss it? And I was like, I was honest with her. I said, I can't even think about it because.
Yeah, but I didn't know that I
kind of blocked it.
I didn't know that I missed it until I got on stage. I'm telling you, Steve.
I think you're right. Yeah, because I haven't missed it, but I think it's like, do you know when you've broken up with somebody and it's broken your heart, but you won't admit it to yourself?
Yeah.
I think it's you see them like that.
And you fucking, yeah. You
like, Jesus, she's gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah, then you see them post on Instagram that they're going out with somebody else.
Blocked.
I would consider stand-up to be like booze for me. It's like, I don't miss booze, honestly.
Yeah.
But if I took a sip of alcohol, I wouldn't fucking stop until the world was over.
You're in Nietzsche's world.
That's why I'll never take a drink. But thank God I was able to get back on stage. Because the minute I was back on stage, I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant.
As Aiden comes home from a coffee run, I'll let Aiden
say... Aiden there, is he?
I'll let Aiden left eventually. He gave up. I'll let Aiden say hello to you, and then we'll wrap it up. Aido, come and say hi to Steve on the podcast. He misses you.
Hey, bro.
Hey, Steve, what's up,
long
man?
Long time. How are you, man?
Wow, you still look like you're living in a cave, huh? Damn.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Good to see you, bro.
Yeah, man. Dude, you definitely got the whole, like, Borat vibe going on, brother.
Yes, Eshimesh.
You already do that, Des?
We talked about his image at the beginning, but that's fine. Aiden, that's fine.
All right, Steve-O.
Good to see you, man.
All right, dude.
Take care.
Well done. Let me put my earphone back in.
I missed Aido.
Oh, yeah, he's glad to see you. So, all right, Steve, well, let's wrap it up.
Absolutely.
You changed your Instagram.
Because, that's a good moment to plug, actually, because I have a film coming out next month. So it was just better to have my real name out there, really, to be honest.
Because I did an Insta story this morning. I had to redo it.
Like, where the fuck is this guy?
No, because I had to redo it because I was like, me and at Hello Steve-O. And then I was like, where's Hello Steve? And then it was like, at the Stephen Mullen.
It's just the Stephen Mullen. It's just my name.
This guy
it's the only way
about
I get
Nietzsche.
My name in.
Hello, Steve-O didn't talk about Nietzsche, but at the Stephen Mullen talks about Nietzsche.
Can I just plug something, actually, because
please.
Someone in my neighborhood actually sent me a message and I shared it on Instagram yesterday, but I said I'd say it on this podcast today. It is for, God bless her. Ruth Staines passed away last month from motor neuron disease, and her amazing partner, Alistair Anderson, is going to leave Stony Batter on his bike on Friday the 14th, and he's going to cycle all the way to Nerja in Spain, where they first met. He's going to cycle 2,750 kilometers to raise funds for the Irish Motor Neuron Disease Foundation. So I'm going to put a link again. If you check out my Instagram, I'll have a link in my stories again. And if anyone wants to donate to Alistair and support him along the way, please do so.
Oh, fair
there
play,
you go.
Man.
That is it. That is it.
Well, that's good. That's your good deed done for the day now, Steve.
Yeah, and look, let's not all get down about it, okay? That's a positive thing to support.
And we're hoping
guys.
For some good outdoor comedy, Steve. We're hoping to get you on stage soon.
Please, God. Please, God. We'll see what happens. Yes, bro. Great to see you.
Good to see you. Thanks for coming back on the pod. You're always welcome back now. We'll have a discussion about it.
Absolutely, we will.
So thanks, guys. Don't forget to leave a review if you listen on Apple Podcasts. Take a screenshot if you listen on Spotify. Spread the word. Leave comments. Tell everybody about the pod. We'll be back next week. Not sure who's going to be on the pod just yet. After an incredible run of being on top of guests, I've gone back into my bad habits of not booking them, but I'm going to book them. We're going to have Nathan McIntosh on. Just have to organize a date. And I'm hoping to have a few more of the New York comics on, and I get some of the Irish comics on Zoom. And
Well, listen, we'll be back next week. That's the one thing I can promise. Until then, have a good week. Enjoy the spring, if you're in that part of the world. If you're on the other side of the world, enjoy the impending winter. And I hope things remain COVID-free wherever you are. And next week, perhaps we can talk about this confusing messaging that's coming out in the United States about masks or no masks. The gift that keeps on giving. The mask debate. All right, guys. Talk to you next week.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.